bread is on the table. My coffee is getting cold. Mama's in the kitchen getting a sweet papa told. You don't know. You don't know my mind. You see me laughing. I'm laughing just to keep from crying. I'm walking down the levee with my head hanging low, looking for my sweet daddy. Lord, he ain't here no more. Now you don't know. You don't know my mind. You see me laughing, laughing just to keep from crying. I worked all the summer and part of the fall. Come home in time for Christmas in my old overalls. Now you don't know. You don't know my mind. When you see me laughing, laughing just to keep from crying.
The great Odetta. I really loved her music too. I loved her and I loved her music. And I was one of hundreds of thousands, I can bet you. That's You Don't Know My Mind. It's from her 2001 album, Looking for a Home. That album was dedicated to the great blues man, Lead Belly. Odetta died on December the 2nd, 2008, but for some reason, she has been on my mind. And it all started because I was flipping through some things and her picture popped up. And I said, well, of course, that's a sign. We have to hear from her musically. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. Well, lots of things are happening. And they're not necessarily good things, but things are happening. There are now enough votes to proceed with an impeachment hearing against President Donald Trump. Several legislators added their names to the yes list after last Wednesday's back-to-back marathon hearings and direct testimony from former special counsel Robert Mueller before both the House and the House Intelligence and Judiciary Committees. Trump's disparaging remarks, in the meantime, about Elijah Cummings, the congressman from Maryland, his district, takes in a chunk of Baltimore. And his Donald Trump saw a fit to let the nation know that he considered Elijah Cummings not as an esteemed congressman, but as a guy who has a rat-infested congressional district in Baltimore. So that also played a part. Over the weekend of shaping people's opinions. That might have accounted for a jump in the number of votes that are necessary to reach a consensus about moving forward with the hearings. As things stand now, how can the Democrats capitalize on the moment? Don't forget, party leader Nancy Pelosi and other influential Democrats have expressed their opposition to impeachment, even though this new vote or the new consensus gives the Democrats the clearance, if you will, they have met the threshold, and they can now formally consider impeachment. So that is something they have on the table. But we're not so sure that this is likely to go ahead. I mean, the Democratic Party seems so fragmented, so fractured. It is hard to envision at this moment that suddenly it will come together. And especially since, you know, you have the leader of the party, Nancy Pelosi, saying that she is not for impeachment. She said that quite early on. Impeachment, she says, is not going to be a good thing either for the party or for the nation. So now with this so-called mandate, since they have met the threshold of the number of votes required to at least bring the matter for wider consideration, I don't know whether she would soften her position on it or go the other way. She has a lot to lose to go the other way. She has a lot to lose if she softens her position, so she would look weak. But in any event, this is where the situation is right now. It's shaping up. People want it to be a fight. They want to see evidence that the Democratic Party finally is standing up to Donald Trump. And more than that, they want to bring it to fruition, which means that they want to be successful in their quest to have an impeachment. And that means that Trump will, of course, be out of office, probably, at least this is the hope, before the presidential election in 2020. I don't see it happening before 2020, because this is a very laborious and tedious process. There's a lot of stuff that goes on. People will be, because many members of Congress are up for re-election, and they have to make some marks as well. So this impeachment process is going to be important to them. So there's no hurry to get it done in that sense, if they think that their chances are not too good at the polls. Trump, on the other hand, you know, people underestimate him. They underestimate not just him, but they underestimate his supporters. And automatically they transfer the animus against Trump to his supporters. And that's a very serious miscalculation. Like, everybody has to have somebody voting for them, no matter how odious they happen to be. But this is a very serious matter in that it gives us an insight of how elections are won, how constituencies are formed, and how they play such a critical role in the electoral process, whether we like it or not. To my mind, the Democrats have been caught with their underwear showing. This should not have happened, and they shouldn't be reacting to Trump. They should have been acting on Trump. They had more than enough ammunition, if you will, to call into question his competency, to call into question the competency of his entire administration. They had more than enough time to raise questions about corruption in his administration, but they didn't do it. They kept waiting for a sign from heaven, I guess. And in the process, they lost valuable momentum. Trump's constituencies, and he has many, including overseas and other parts of the world, Trump understands how to mine, M-I-N-E, the hearts and minds of voters. It's like, it reminds you of a weakened version of the Barnum and Bailey promoter, circus promoter. Outrageous things, lies, deceptions, outright breaking of the law. He's done all these things and gotten away with it. And he has gotten away with it because the Democrats appear to be way too reticent, very, very, they didn't want to touch him at all, even though they had good reason to. So they laid off. And that allowed him time to build not only momentum, but to actually build his base. And it allowed him time to study how to get over. And how do you get over in the United States of America? If you were Trump, you use what you've got. And what you've got is race. It is the old canard, but it has worked very well all these years. Why change it now? Quite the opposite. Trump is reinforcing all these crazy theories and whatnot, as long as they build on the polarity, black-white polarity, and increasingly the class polarity. But when his base hears and sees him underscoring the racist philosophies that they themselves ascribe to, all the more reason to say, well, he ain't perfect, but he's our man. He's our man. Donald Trump is underscoring the basest beliefs of this country. He's making racism fashionable again. In fact, his success at the polls depends on him maintaining this racial divide. He knows that deep-seated in the minds of voters is a consciousness about race, and a consciousness that registers more loudly than anything else. They're not really concerned about the economy. They're not concerned about the future of the country. They're not concerned about the so-called American ideals. They are concerned and they're terrified about how this issue of race will be resolved. For blacks, blacks are seeking inclusion, Latinos are seeking inclusion, all the disparate groupings have their own reasons for hoping that things would change, that this conversation, these attitudes would be put to bed once and for all. That is because we do not understand how important it is, how essential it is to American society. We've covered up and we have indulged in distraction, that that's not what really drives the heart and soul of America. Surely, Americans, by now, we have evolved. We are now on a higher plane. And we have made progress. They all tell us that. We have made progress. America is not that beastly country it used to be, where you take your life in your hands by being in the wrong place at the wrong time, and everybody sanctions a racial killing. No, we have evolved. People of color are now quietly moving into communities that prohibited them from being there before. At least this is what we think. This is what we think. We are beyond the days of the Klan and domestic terrorism. We are beyond the days of leaders egging people on, stoking the fires of hatred. We're beyond that. People see through that now. And we're operating at a higher level. That's what they tell us. At least this is what the attitude conveys. But we're not beyond that. That's what we don't understand. Racism or racial oppression is a vital part of everyday life in this country. And the, excuse me, and the more that we see groups jostling with each other for some kind of advantage, this is how they play us off against each other, that's what they will do to keep this game going. And it's going very well. We are lying to ourselves if we think that we are beyond the likes of Trump. The country is built on the likes of Trump, on the beliefs of Trump and the attitudes of Trump. Domination, annihilation. Who ultimately will be in control of resources, all kinds of resources? So this is what this has come to be, this election and beyond it. But we therefore can see how difficult it is, even for Nancy Pelosi, as liberal as she is said to be. She is backing away. The constituencies that are predominantly Democratic have an entirely different attitude. We know this. They want Trump and all the people who support him in his administration out. It's not a secret. While the wealthy are doing better than they have been doing for decades, we see poverty, an intractable force, still there, not moving, and engulfing more and more people into its ranks. Unevenness in access to resources, inequality, economic inequality. So this is really what we have to face tomorrow and Wednesday in Detroit, there will be another debate staged by the Democrats. And people will now, especially the ones who have been weak so far in defining some kind of clear path for those who have been locked out of society's resources and benefits. This is convenient. They can all blame Trump. Trump is the evil guy. Well, he is evil. I don't dispute that. But I'm saying that they too are going on the Trump bandwagon, at least philosophically. All we need to know is that the difficulties that we are suffering and going through at this point in time is because there is a guy named Donald Trump who's president of the United States. It isn't because the Democratic Party fell down on the job. It isn't because the Democratic Party was behaving like the power elite and ignoring its base. It wasn't because the Democratic Party itself has its own racial wars going on. So that the predominantly white leadership within the party doesn't understand, not in contact with, the overwhelming people of color in its bases. It is not that the Democratic Party had ceased to evolve, knowing what it knows. It has the facts, it has the figures. But we can certainly say that the Democratic Party, having derived enormous benefits in terms of the power equation in this country on the backs of people of color predominantly, abandoned its bases. It thought it was safe. And the only reason that they could think that is they believed that they had succeeded in fully capturing the Black Latino communities, the gay community, and other communities that had been splintered off from the Democratic Party for a long time and ignored. So the party now has to reckon with its own racist actions and the consequences thereof now that as we approach the presidential election. The Democratic Party is not ringing true to most of its people, most of its members. You get something done, and the reason we get anything done is people had to fight the party to get even basic things done that also were so logical to do. They didn't do them. Under a black president, and they were telling us this was the moment of glory for 8 years. And we had a sensitive white president before that, Bill Clinton, another 8 years. Show me specific attention and programs that helped to build affordable housing, that built schools that actually educated children, that did something about the inequity pay inequity. You know, and we could go on and on. The Democratic Party turned its back on its faithful supporters. And now they are going to be entering into a new cycle of rewriting, at least rescripting in our heads, what we are supposed to be triggered by with the Republican Party's actions, this president's actions. They took a very big and long vacation from taking care of business. And we let them, by force of habit, we continue to support the Democratic Party no matter how many transgressions it committed against us. And we rationalized it to say, well, look, they're not perfect, but they damn sure are a better choice than the Republicans. Well, that's not a good argument. Because for one thing, a lot of the things that they were pointing to were simply not true. But over the years, they have built up this imaginary argument that they're more liberal, they're more considerate, they're more interested in promoting these ideals than the other party. That's not true. That's what they say. But you look and you see how under the Democratic administrations, we have had more people jailed than at any other time in our history, and most of them are people of color. We have had a housing crisis compounded by another housing crisis. Inattention to things that matter to these communities, like education, like health care. How much yardage did they gain by pummeling these administrations to do the right thing and advancing? No, they're interested in their jobs. So this is where we are. And this is a very untenable position to be in. We know that the Republicans, and certainly this president, does not have an abiding commitment to high ideals. They're not interested in promoting the idea that there's enough for everybody. We just have to be smart about how we allocate our resources. But when you use taxpayer dollars to punish people, when you take from them what is due them, and this is what you consider to be politics, you're introducing, under this administration, this current administration, we have seen the reintroduction of fascism in this country. With great delight, it announced just over the weekend, the death penalty is back. Aren't you happy? And we're looking to leaders who long ago, they're tired. They don't have much more to give. They're physically depleted. They're mentally depleted. And they're being shamed by a new crop of people coming in who, whether you like them or not, at least have indicated a resolve to put as much energy as they can, put everything that they can into advancing the cause. This is why they are deemed as threats to the old order. The old order is not working. And none other than Nancy Pelosi and the senior Democrats have helped to create the schism. They see these newcomers not as fresh, oxygenated blood, which the party desperately needs, but a threat to the things that they are in politics for. Money, power, influence. As the agents of corporations and big money people. That's why they're giving them a hard time. So this week, we have to be on watch. How is the party behaving? Is it showing signs that it is kind of willing to change? Is it redefining leadership? Is it clear that it is at war? They're not behaving like they're at war. They have these little skirmishes and little, you know, I slap your hand, you slap mine kind of thing. That's not a battle. And they are not winning. They're not winning. They are fighting according to Trump's rules. They are merely reacting. They haven't taken the lead in a long time on special projects and issues. They are reacting. So we have to have that kind of talk with the Democratic Party. They're acting as if this is one person's party. It doesn't belong to Nancy Pelosi. I'm not aware that the party was bequeathed to her in somebody's will, and she owns it outright. And you have to ask permission to do the business of legislating, which is why you are elected. The people elect you, and you voluntarily place yourself on a farm. What is this? You know, I have shared the story many times as to why I left this whole party business more than 20 years ago. It's insulting what they're doing. It is wrong. And ultimately, it is going to cost us. Because if the people's representatives aren't getting anywhere with new ideas, what do you think is happening to the people themselves? So, this week, pay attention to things as they unfold and do some serious thinking and reevaluating. Where are we in this moment in time? What can we expect to happen when the party, and it's not listening, by the way, the party is not listening. When the party believes it knows best, and that you no longer have your own mind, You can't think for yourself. So you must go along with their program, which is exactly the attitude of you-know-who is in the White House. We're in a bad, bad situation. And that is why I give no allegiance to party. None. They don't deserve it. The party, time and again, has betrayed the interests of the people and acts in its own way as an elite presence in our society. We have no interaction with them, and they desire no interaction with us except on election day, just show up and, like a lemming, you know, follow orders and flick that lever and then get lost. We have to deal with this party. We certainly do. I'll take a break here and come back to your thoughts at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We'll come back and talk about things political right after this.
Well, I'm not good looking. I don't dress fine. But I'm the kind of woman who will take her time. You don't know. You don't know my mind. When you see me laughing, laughing just to keep from crying. I cannot forge no wheel, and I can't shape no...
You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we're talking about the moment we're in. And what does it require of us? What are we to do? What should we be about in this moment of time? When we see, you know, it's a new cycle of activity, and that means people will be absorbed into a system that won't work for them, and other people are being bamboozled, and other people just are puzzled as to what to do, where to go, because they're looking for what? Solutions. We haven't been getting solutions for a long time, and we would be dishonest if we say that the issue is the Republicans and Donald Trump. They're just doing what they have to do to survive in their world. What are we doing to survive in our world? That's what I want to know. What are your thoughts on the subject? 888-874-4888. Gary from New York, you're on the air.
How are you?
Fine, thank you, Gary.
So I have a couple of thoughts. One is, you seem to be suggesting that our leaders are not listening to us, and I'm not disagreeing with that. However, from the polls that I've seen, the popular vote from the electorate does not suggest that most people want Congress to proceed. That's number one. Number two is to get an impeachment by Congress. Obviously, the support of the Senate would be required, which there's no way possible. I think that that can be done. Now, I do believe that an impeachment inquiry, which, as I understand, is underway currently, is a helpful thing because it will bring more attention to the American public of the underlying details that went into the Mueller report and from the grand jury, etc. But I'm a little puzzled on this matter because of, again, those two issues. One, the public position doesn't seem fully to support movement forward, and secondly, the Senate would not approve it?
Well, I have a different attitude about that. And my attitude is, I'm not worrying about impeachment. I'm worried that over many years, and it appears that the intention is to go for many years more, we have been impeached. The people have had their rights and their access to the throttle and brake of government yanked away from them. They have no power. And we increasingly are looking at corruption and incompetence, and they intend to continue the pattern. And they're daring us. How dare you believe that you could interrupt the pattern? We have also, on our end of this stick, we have a great deal of responsibility for our condition, because we won't fight back. We're not taking responsibility for this thing that we say we cherish so much, which is our vote and this notion of the democratic ideal. We've left that to other people. And so they've said, thank you. Thank you for giving us all this power. And they do what they want to do. We are still operating in widespread denial about what is going on here, what we think is a democratic society. It is not. But we keep reinforcing this bad habit over and over and over again, expecting different results. And I don't understand that logic. Thanks for calling in. David from Brooklyn. How are you, David?
Yes, good afternoon, Eutrice. You know, a lot of things are going around in my head, and I think this is a time when people have to understand some basics. And starting off with the basics, those people who founded this country had no intention of creating a small-d democratic society. This was created as a slave-owning republic with the ruling class who created that Bible we call the Constitution to maintain control of this society. So as I see it, the people have no party that represents their interests, not the Democrat, Big D, or the Republican. They are under the control of the ruling class that controls both of those groups, and it was set that way in the beginning to the point where it is very successful now to do what the ruling class of this country wants done, to enrich themselves at the expense of everyone else. So
there you go.
The people have no party. The Democrats Party and the Republican Party is not there to serve the interests of the masses of people in the country. We got to get it. There's no way that you're going to get a party controlled by a ruling class that pretends to serve the interests of the whole country and all of people to do that. The ruling class is interested in itself. Now, the games they play with these elections and the whole system is set up not to be a democracy. How could you have a democracy and have a Senate? You know, that's impossible. So, you know, people have to get it. No matter how you cut it, it's impossible to be in the slave master's party and think that you're going to get somewhere. To me, it reminds me of the people who were kidnapped and enslaved, talking about the doings in the big house. The big house, that's, you know, where the chief executive lives, the president and so forth. And also talking about in the operational center where the underlings, the people who control the slaves' work ethic and so forth, those are the people in the Congress. And none of those people work for the masses of people. So we got to get it. And most people don't get it. So, you know, that's the problem. You know, the people have no party that represents them. The elections, they have these bases, and they correct. Imagine you're a worker and a poor person, and you're in the same party with the ruling class. I mean, you must be losing your mind if you think that party is going to work for you. So as I see it, any kind of viable party has been stifled. They make it nearly impossible for smaller parties to be viable, and they've been successful at that. They control the state legislatures where all the laws that decide who is to vote and how parties get on the ballot and whatnot. The whole thing is rigged, and people have to get it that you cannot get anywhere with being in a slave master's party. That's a possibility. So I'm not worried about impeachment and all that. I don't want to take all my energy and put it on stuff that is ridiculous. I'm not worried about the Republicans and Democrats because these are parties that are owned lock, stock, and barrel by the ruling class. There's no way that little people are going to, the little people, that is the masses of people that live here, are going to control the master's party. The people, if they wanted a party, they should have a party that represents them. But these both of those parties represent the ruling class and a ruling class only, and they're going to do what's good for the ruling class at the expense, at the big expense of the masses of people, and they're getting more successful at it each and every day because people are getting poorer and poorer, and the ruling class is getting richer and richer.
Amen. Thank you. Bruce from New York, you're on the air. What are your thoughts? Okay, Bruce, you kind of faded on us there for a minute. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Nutrice. How are you? I hope all is well. It seems to me that Donald Trump has the American Democratic people on remote control. I mean, whatever he decides to say or do, he gets a reaction, and the most silliest of reactions. And it's like it's a game to him. It's like he dictates how the narrative should go at all costs. And the sad thing is that there's no winners in this for everyday people because of the simple fact that he's controlling the narrative to the point to where things are not being dealt with the way that they should be in this country for people who are in these situations like Baltimore and things of that nature. But the reality is Cummings has some blame for the conditions of Baltimore. I mean, because it's his district.
Well, actually, his son-in-law and the family of the son-in-law, they own quite a bit of real estate in Baltimore. Many of their buildings are rat-infested. So
well,
deal with that.
But But the question becomes this. Who's going to put forward the narrative? Who in the media is going to point that out? It seems like nobody points these type of narratives out. And he should be held accountable for this. So until the media...
Let's talk some hard stuff here. Woulda, coulda, shoulda, the idea is that no matter what we are saying right now, how much impact do you think it's having on the world of politics? Very little. They are taking care of themselves and their survival. And
they're supposed to.
But they're doing that with the understanding that we too will see to their survival. No, we should have a whole different program.
Why should they change? I would just like to ask this one question. If you got something good working for you, why would you change it? What is the reason to change it if it's working for you? I mean, that's why I'm at the point where I blame the Democratic Party more than I blame Trump, because the simple fact, he's just playing the playbook that they're allowing him to play without giving any type of real fight back. It's just like this whole thing with impeachment. If you impeach the guy, but you don't put forward the right analysis, then what good is it? If you're not going to narrate the story in a manner for the American people to understand it, then you're basically wasting time. Because he's the one who's going to dictate how the narrative is put forward. That's something the Democrats don't have the ability to do. That's why the clown is in office.
You got to be able to control the narrative. The Democrats absolutely have a authority to shape the narrative and to spread the narrative. They just haven't done it.
They don't know how.
This has been going on too long, you trees.
This has been going on with Obama and before him. With Bush,
but their system says,
don't know how to put forward a narrative.
They know how to do all those things, but here's what they're thinking. Why am I going to spend... I have only two more years before I have to think about a re-election. I got to go raise some money. I've got to campaign. I've got to do all kinds of things. The last thing on my mind is, you know, helping people understand the narrative. They're not even in the remotest corner of my mind.
Hold on one second. So what you're basically saying, their re-election, their patent of their pension is more important than their community, than the lives of the American people, than the country. So it's more important that they get reelected so that they can keep this $200,000 a year job and pad their pension than it is my family and your family. That says a lot.
Don't underestimate that, because that is a very important part of the political machine.
And that's why you could have a Charlie Rangel for over 40 years in my community, and now my community no longer has the population of black people in Harlem. Black people don't have businesses, black people don't have nothing.
What have the people of Harlem done? That's just my point. I understand all of that. I'm saying we cannot excuse the inaction of the people who are expecting to be paid attention to. And they're doing nothing to protect the value of their vote. They're doing nothing. So if they're doing nothing, nobody needs to feel threatened because you're doing nothing. It's not Charlie Rangel's fault. He's very happy to have a relatively calm and non-eventful term in office. People are doing nothing and nothing and nothing and nothing. This is my problem. Where do we come in? When do we recognize that we have some accounting to do for our inaction? And it's not a good, very comfortable conversation to have, but it's a necessary conversation we have to have. And we have to change our habits. We have to turn things around, because inevitably we will be the ones bearing the responsibility for the deterioration of our neighborhoods, the lack of services to our elderly and our children, and people who are not able to function fully the way they used to. We're the ones. And we keep passing the buck all the time. We point the finger outwards, and we don't ask, well, to what degree am I accountable? Well, we've come to the end of our program today. I want to thank you so much for calling in and participating. We still had a couple of calls we didn't get to, but maybe tomorrow. Thanks for listening, and thank you very much for your opinions. Bye-bye.
But I can do anything if you show me how. You don't know. You don't know my mind. Now when you see me loving, loving just to keep